Hulu presents a Hulu documentary. Warning, the following documentary contains profanity, nudity, violence, naughty behavior, substance abuse, and material only suitable for mature audiences. For your safety and the protection of those around you, do not attempt to reenact any stunt or activity you're about to see. Viewer discretion is advised. Journalism is printing what someone else does not want printed. Everything else is public relations. George Orwell. A newscast, Los Angeles, California, 1994.
Well, here's something your children may be reading that you should definitely know about. It's a shocking magazine. It tells you how to commit suicide, tells you all about drug use, and also explicit descriptions of sex.
May seem hard to believe, but this magazine is really aimed at kids.
A Big Brother skateboard magazine.
When Big Brother came out, it was like pushing the boundaries of not only the level of skateboarding, but it was a true window into what these skaters were really like.
Chad Muska, pro skateboarder.
It felt so edgy, and you felt cool by reading it. Like, I felt like I was in on something that my other friends who didn't skate...
Jonah Hill, Big Brother reader.
...were missing out on.
That shit influenced everything to this fucking day.
Jeff Grosso, pro skateboarder.
It forever changed the face of pop culture. Fuck just skateboarding.
Another cover.
I found a whole group of guys that I really liked and respected and were...
Johnny Knoxville, writer, actor.
Like, high-level functioning pieces of shit.
Rob Dyrdek, pro skateboarder.
It really opened Pandora's box of like, man, this is really entertaining when people take it to this level.
Jeff Tremaine.
Every aspect of what we did was unprofessional and amateur.
Mark Johnson.
Sparked so many, like, talented creative people, like, Jackass came out of that.
Jackass before Jackass.
Bam Margera, pro skateboarder. A rapid series of Big Brother magazines appear. Footage of a skateboarder jumping off a balcony freezes into a photo. A documentary by Patrick O'Dell. A cover shows a man in a diaper with a cross on his back. A skater tumbles into the street. A woman in a truck waves an American flag. A little person dances the sprinkler. A man in a jockstrap and rollerblades swings around a street lamp. An article title reads, Bong Olympics. A man in a red shirt raises his middle finger. Two men fight in front of concrete stairs. A man does a backflip as a fireball plumes upward. A little person, painted blue with orange hair, strides down the Hollywood Walk of Fame. A station wagon hits Johnny Knoxville and he rolls across the hood. A man jumps from a theme park balcony into a water ride. An LED sign at Disneyland reads, Slayer with Big Brother. Cartoon man reads a copy of Big Brother. A gun reaches from its pages and shoots him. Dumb, the story of Big Brother magazine.
Christian's getting ready to bring it on.
In a crowded arena, a skater stands atop a half pipe. Vision Pro Skate Escape, Irvine, California, 1988.
In the late 80s, skateboarding was huge.
The skater rides down the ramp and jumps, grabbing his board in midair.
The pros were like rock stars.
Jeff Grosso, pro skateboarder.
By the time the 90s hit, the whole thing just took a fucking nosedive, and the industry almost collapsed.
Headline, skateboarding is
skateboards
dead.
Skateboards were a trend toy. They were a yo-yo, a hula hoop. And all the little kids who had been fueling the skateboard industry took their money to rollerblading or whatever the next stupid trend was.
Tony Hawk, pro skateboarder.
Yeah, 91 was kind of rough for me. I was still trying to make a career as a pro skater. I had a huge mortgage payment that I couldn't afford, and basically I was just kind of hunkering down and eating Top Ramen and Taco Bell.
Mark Johnson.
Well, at the time Big Brother launched, it was just Thrasher and Transworld.
A pair of magazine covers.
Transworld was considered more of the goody two-shoes magazine and very Southern California-centric. And then Thrasher was the hardcore, the punk, you know, the guys that are in the band, drinking, and very NorCal-centric.
I just remember Transworld and Thrasher were
Jason Jesse,
boring.
Pro skateboarder.
Because you get sick of the same...
Tim Gavin, you know, pro skateboarder.
Nonsense in every skateboard magazine. Action trick, ad, ad, action trick.
Spike Jones.
There wasn't anything in skateboard magazines that pertained to any of the rest of your life.
A photo of a skater begging.
Skateboarding was struggling as a whole. And I don't know, it seemed like...
Jamie Thomas, pro skateboarder.
There was a need for something new.
A row of skateboards bear a man's face.
During this bleak period, Steve Rocco and his skateboard company, World Industries, kind of rose out of the ashes.
Skateboarding itself was changing.
Steve Rocco, founder of World Industries and Big Brother.
It was going less from vert and more to street.
Skaters doing tricks.
And the big companies were sort of oblivious of it. It was just the beginning of the end for those big companies, and it was a start for us.
A World Industries logo.
You know, Rocco's the ultimate provocateur.
A photo of skaters.
The creation of World Industries came out of wanting to, like, spite the skateboard industry, but in a really funny way.
Mike Bolelli, pro skateboarder.
Steve Rocco's advertising, his approach to advertising and marketing and the way he, you know, promoted his company affected the entire industry. Either you reacted to it or you kind of jumped on the bandwagon and did the same type of advertising. And if you didn't, you were totally out of the mix.
An article reads, out with the old, in with the new.
I always looked at World Industries as this more cutting edge type brand. And the graphics were just super compelling and unique and just felt more.
Skateboard decks with nudity and violent imagery.
Sorry, edgy.
A deck with a cartoon explosion.
The thing that Rocco was smart about was keeping his fucking finger on the pulse of what the kids were into. What the kids are doing, how the kids feel about shit.
And he didn't have anything to lose. So I think that was it. Everyone else had too many things they were beholden to, or no one wanted to be that irreverent.
A deck with Charles Manson as Charlie Brown.
By 1992, Steve Rocco and his companies, they'd totally taken over the industry. They were outselling everybody else.
A man wears a World Industries hoodie.
God, it was like the Wild West, I guess.
An image of two skaters.
It was pretty much the heyday of the skater-owned companies, and everybody was just doing what they wanted. It's just an amazing feeling. No one can tell you no.
So why did you decide to start the magazine?
Basically because I was told no.
An image of a boy labeled failure.
We wanted to run an ad. It was one of our skaters, and he was trying to do this really hard trick, and he kept missing. And then the next page was him with like a gun to his head and kill himself.
A Transworld cover.
Transworld wouldn't run it because Larry Balma had a friend who killed himself in high school, which is a bummer. I mean, God.
And I think that was the problem with the endemic mags at the time before Big Brother is.
Damon Way.
We had a couple of guys in control of them, and they were editing what we saw and didn't see.
A blank space where an ad should go.
So Steve Rock was like, fuck you. I'm gonna go make my own magazine, and I'm gonna do whatever the fuck I want.
Dave Swift.
When we heard that, we just thought, oh, that's funny. Ha ha, you're not starting anything.
Former editor of Transworld magazine.
But then he did.
In hindsight, obviously, I overreacted a bit.
Walter Sims, editor on Big Brother 1.
I suppose it was fun. I mean, we were working in that warehouse with the skate park, and so there was a lot of activity there. And we just set up a desk, and you know, our mandate was to put out a magazine of some sort. So we just made it up.
An image of the first page.
I think the whole thing was just like, okay, we've got a magazine. We're going to fucking say fuck as many fucking times as we want. So the whole first page was just an excuse to use the word fuck.
A one sentence article. We arrived. It was hot. Hawk won. But by then we had left.
Well, he definitely thought it should be more pushing outward on ideas. And we were more
Natas Kopas.
Just futzing around and shoegazing.
Art director on Big Brother 1.
It was a disaster. It was great, but it was a disaster.
I remember the first one being free because, like, the quality was so shitty. And I remember the sticker on the front, like, the people who made this magazine didn't know what they were doing, so we're giving it away.
An image of the warning sticker.
I guess the spirit of the first one was more just, like, just the act of it was rebellious, but it didn't really become Big Brother until Tremaine came on and did issue number 2.
I met Spike Jonze when he was 12 and I was 15 or 14. He moved out to California where he got his filmmaking career started at World Industries making videos.
So I introduced him to Rocco, but I don't think even at the time I fully understood how perfect Tremaine's sensibility would be for Big Brother.
A photo of younger Jeff Tremaine.
So when I first got hired, it was a staff of one. It's just me, and I don't write. But I met Mark McKee and Sean Cliver. They were artists for World Industries, really responsible for a lot of the fuck you attitude that World had. And they were able to translate that attitude into the pages of Big Brother.
Sean Cliver.
I never had any formal writing training or aspirations, but it was fun. It was just fun to do. And I'd always been a skate nerd.
A skater jumps over a fire hydrant.
I have like kind of an obsession with grammar and spelling. So, I mean, I really like writing. And so it's something I was like, stoked to do.
Mark McKee, graphic artist, editor.
And punctuation.
Jeff took up residence in the magazine office at the skate park. And probably within the first week he was there, old Parker washed up. on the doorstep.
A man in glasses holds a camera.
He had a zine called Polyurethane Monthly that he sent to me. And it was actually pretty neat, just kind of small adventures that he and his crew would go on and end up some skateboarding and some light mischief. And thought he had a neat take on the riding style and on skateboarding.
Before the internet, a lot of skaters would pretty much make these homemade zines on a Xerox machine. It was really the best way to show what's happening in your local skate scene.
I was a subscriber, so I sent in money in an envelope, like cash, an envelope, and then I would get them every month.
And it was well written, and it was these sketchy pictures, and it was very punk rock.
I could see based on his creativity why they wanted him to be involved in Big Brother, but I had never actually met him though, so I didn't know how out there he was.
Earl Parker, writer for Big Brother.
All throughout those days in the 1990s, I just lived at the offices. I would just ride a bike or walk around and crash at the offices and stuff.
Footage of Earl working at a desk.
Just sleep on your desk?
I would sleep Earl. Under my desk, yeah.
What you doing?
Earl drinks from a clear glass bottle.
When Earl moved out to California, he didn't have a home, he didn't have any money. So when Jermaine would come into work in the morning, he usually stopped at a gas station and he would pick Earl up some food.
And I bought him, you know, those big pink snowballs? Like the grossest food I could find. And to wash that down, I found this blue soda. It was Windex blue. It was the only blue drink at the time. Every day I would pick him up pink and blue and give it to him. That's his sustenance. So I was sort of experimenting on this kid because I could, like, what the fuck?
In the earliest days of the magazine, a lot of times we'd subsist on food from gas stations that we called Ultima, and the guys would buy me all this really strange stuff and make me eat it and drink it, and I still live that way to this day. I shop at a gas station every day.
A photo of Sean, Earl, and Mark at a bar.
So I had three writers, but what I really needed was a full-time photographer, and that's when I met Rick Cossack.
I've been shooting for different magazines, and when the Big Brother guys came and asked me to shoot for them, I was psyched. Because that was Rocco's magazine, and I wanted to be a part of that excitement.
He photographs a skater jumping.
I mean, almost immediately. Like, the little zine was just like, whatever, but that second issue that came out, like, you just kind of knew, like, holy shit, this is a fucking real magazine. I mean, it was just raw as shit out of the gate.
A young man's face on the cover of Big Brother.
I love Transworld and Thrasher, but there was just something about Big Brother, like, I liked the goofiness, the articles in between.
Footage of Rob Dyrdek mugging for the camera.
Big Brother was like we literally don't care about anything. Skateboarding happens to be in here, but we're gonna show you disgusting, foul, crazy. We're going to figure out what can we create that'll make you cringe or blow your mind or your parents will hate or you'll get in trouble for even having this magazine.
There was always something in every issue that was like breaking some boundary, something that no one was supposed to do, and they were doing it. As a young, rebellious skate kid, like, I love that.
They were funny. They were, like, really funny.
Tim O'Connor, pro skateboarder.
It was a combination of both intelligent people with a good sense of humor, and which is a perfect marriage, and they skate. I read everything in those magazines, every last word.
With Jonah Hill.
No other magazine of any kind had the subversive sense of humor, and that was what was, I think, ultimately what I took away from it the most. Also, there was nudity in it.
Rocco really wanted tits in the magazine, too. He thought it was really important that the skaters want boobs, you know, they want to be able to see boobs.
Which, as a 10 or 11-year-old, is really meaningful at that time.
Jerry Sue.
Because we didn't look at, like, things with hot girls, really. Like, all we did was skate and look at skate magazines.
They were covering hardcore skating, but also guys drinking and smoking and partying, and I guess it was more in tune with what skating was back then.
The kids were fucking out in the streets, running fucking amok.
Young men knock over signs and trash cans.
These guys were all just delinquents, and nobody ever showed that part. They showed like little bits and pieces of it, but it was really cool to see like all the other sides of, you know, the skaters. I mean, no matter how rotten it was.
Big Brother came along, and then it was like, all bets are off. We'll say and do whatever the fuck we want. And it really did fucking scare a lot of people.
An article reads, washed up skaters.
It was fucking rad, you know? They didn't give a fuck.
They did fucking articles how to buy crack on the fucking street.
Andy Roy post skateboarder.
It was a variety pack of fucking madness. It was sick.
A naked man in midair.
There was no rules. Like, we were self-governed. We should have had more rules.
Gavin McInnes, co-founder of Vice Media.
I didn't know anything about publishing when I was making Vice. And I thought, well, you have to follow the rules. And I had a sort of eureka moment when I was looking at Big Brother and they had how to do lines and stuff and how to party. And it was pixie sticks of sugar. Totally wrong, probably completely illegal. You're really risking getting sued. Not only was it fucking hilarious, but it also showed the readership that this isn't a family magazine and we get you guys.
A boy snorts sugar off a skateboard.
Oh, that's a lot my loss.
Is he gonna rush?
Yeah.
With Dave Swift.
And here I am, becoming the editor of Transworld, and seeing, you know, Big Brother able to cuss.
The word fuck on a wall.
Kind of, you know, a little more adult humor. Stuff that we couldn't do at Transworld because the owners just wouldn't let us do it.
Photos of nude women.
It did make me, as a skateboarder, feel a little bit like, kind of the pussy, I guess.
Michael Burnett.
It had a total, like, clubhouse atmosphere. Like, you're like, oh, here's the character.
Editor of Thrasher magazine.
And they just wrote about themselves all day. Like, half the shit is just them talking about themselves. And then these cool skaters who happen to be in the area get, like, kind of roped into it here and there.
There was a soul behind the magazine. It wasn't just this magazine that words magically appeared in and photos or just happened to be there. There was a face behind those words. That's what made it interesting.
More articles appear.
We had to fill the pages with something, and we tried to fill it with skateboarding-related stuff, but half the time it was just Rick's antics.
Images of Rick.
It was just something we did to amuse ourselves, and it created content for the magazine.
Rick naked, bound in a cage.
And that's how Rick became a character.
An illustration of Rick pointing to a crab.
I had more coverage in the magazine than a lot of pros at the time.
Oh, sorry, hold on a second.
But the most devastating thing that that magazine did to its competitors is convince everybody to do those fucking video grabs.
Stills of a skater grinding.
It's actually kind of a smart thing because skateboarding was evolving very quickly at this time. This is the early 90s and very technical tricks.
Back then, still cameras could only shoot 6 frames per second. And the board was flipping so fast that it couldn't capture the trick correctly. So Rocco came up with the idea that you could pull a frame grab from a video and put it in print.
They looked ugly. But I don't think the skaters gave a shit about it, what it looked like. They liked seeing the most current tricks.
It gave it the opportunity to progress skateboarding tremendously from the beautiful, stale thing that we'd all known to, you know, expect.
Big Brother, dude.
Greg Carroll, 1992.
No, they don't take photos for that magazine, they just film. What's up, Rocco?
And then Thrasher and Transworld thought that they had to do that too. Yeah, we got that. And then think about a fucking video grab on the Thrasher paper. Like, what? I think it's a hamster. You're just like, what the fuck is that? Like, nobody. So that was devastating. That was nice work, you guys.
Simon Woodstock, pro skateboarder.
Like, completely lacked. I mean, come on, some of those covers, that cover, that Rick Howard cover, the all red concept and trick and photo by Spike Jones, that's gold.
On an all-red set, a skater wears red with red paint covering his skin. He does a kickflip, and Spike snaps a photo in midair.
Rocco loved gimmicks. He wanted every issue of the magazine to come out different. The second issue came in a super large format. Third issue had spiral binding. Fourth issue was square. Fifth issue was comic book size, came with trading cards. Sixth issue, which was, you know, the ultimate in some kids' eyes, was the cereal box issue.
Everybody was just like, this is awesome, let's do it, and we'll get the companies to put prizes in it, and it just went from stuff like that.
It was so cool, but I couldn't show my parents, you know what I mean? Because I had wieners all over it with ants.
The cereal is penis-shaped.
There were no rules, and it was gonna be new every issue. We were never gonna use the same logo, we were never gonna do the same format. It was always gonna be something special. You didn't know what you were gonna get.
Covers appear.
And everyone just got into it, whatever it was, and we'd move on once we did it and do something else.
It was such a creative opportunity to do whatever we want. I mean, that, if you're an artist, that's
heaven.
With Mark McKee.
Once the advertisers saw like the content of the magazine, then they kind of would emulate that in their ads.
An illustrated baby emerging from a vagina.
There were a lot of new brands coming up that wanted to establish themselves, and Big Brother gave them the freedom to do whatever they wanted.
A BDSM ad.
That was when the ads became content themselves in a way.
An ad with a blow-up doll.
You know, really, Big Brother empowered a generation of brands.
Damon Way.
To express themselves through the culture of skateboarding versus just the sport of skateboarding.
Ken Block.
There was one version of that ad that was done for Big Brother, and then there was a different version that went in the other magazines.
Co-founder of DC Shoes.
That's what made it fun for us, because we could sort of push those boundaries a little bit of what you could normally do.
Because there was no policy, there was no, like, written policy.
An ad with a penis and a harness.
It was up to us.
A Got Milk ad with a woman's breast.
Which ones could go, which ones couldn't go, but everything went. I think everything went, even ads with me getting screwed in the butt went.
Was there anything we could have sent you that you would have said no?
An ad with a man lying on a giant anus.
Not without looking hypocritical. I mean.
A lot of times the ads got us more in trouble than anything we could write.
Shorties did an ad where there was the
Heather Lee Jones
inside of the plastic vagina.
And we submitted that to the printer, and they were like, fuck this, we're not printing this. And so I guess the solution was that we had to show that it was an artificial vagina. So there's a little box within the ad that shows you what it is.
A disclaimer on the ad.
Yeah, I don't think that showed up in Transworld.
Damon sits outside.
I think you didn't realize how conservative the skateboard industry was until Big Brother came out.
It represents the pure side of skateboarding, that is that sort of fuck you and fuck everybody mentality. Let's see if we can't cause some problems, which they eventually did.
Sold as a teen skateboard magazine, Big Brother has upset a number of local parents because mixed in with skateboard articles and stories of graphic sex is an article that details how to kill yourself.
The first time we ever got on the news was in Ohio somewhere, and it was basically the how to kill yourself article. And we thought that was awesome.
Along with suggestions on using guns and pills, the magazine suggests hanging and explains how to use a cotton cloth or tie and a doorknob. It also recommends slit your wrists and explains the best way to make the cuts.
It was a reaction to all the how to, you know, ollie. How to do a kickflip. How to kill yourself was clearly the next place to take it.
I mean, that to me was the funniest thing ever as a kid. Now do I find that funny?
Atiba Jefferson.
I don't know.
Like afterwards, like when, like I remember it was, you know, like there was a big fuss over it. I was like, yeah, why would we do that? Why would we do an article on how to kill yourself? I don't think a lot was that thought out.
An image of a man hanging by a towel on a doorknob.
As the magazine began finding its voice.
With Sean Cliver.
Others with a similar voice would find us.
Yeah, they were like Big Brother characters. They weren't like the top pros, but they had the right personality and spirit that always meshed with our magazine.
A photo of Andy Roy.
If I wouldn't have got fucked up on drugs and shooting fucking heroin on my fucking wiener, I fucking been raw. I would have been a poster child for Big Brother.
A photo of Andy holding a pistol outside.
You didn't have to be the best skater in the world. You didn't have to be the coolest or the best looking or like the most fit or whatever it was, you know? It was like, it was kind of a freak show.
Photo of a nude man and woman.
One of our contributing photographers, Thomas Campbell, submitted these hilarious photos and a fucked up interview with an unknown skater named Chris Pontius.
Photos of Chris skating.
He would write little articles here and there.
18 ways to be an asshole.
We let him answer the letters once, and it was the funniest thing, so we decided, Chris, you need to answer all the letters, because
Chris dressed as a baby.
He takes the letter writer on such a weird adventure.
I always liked to write and stuff, but I never thought like that I would, you know, was going to like write for Big Brother or nothing. It just seemed like a separate world to me that it just seemed so far away.
An article, The Christian Ass Fucker.
It was Pontius who introduced us to Dave Carney.
Footage of Dave in a bathroom.
Come on in. I'm sure I didn't make a new drink.
Dave Carney brought a lot to the magazine.
He unbuckles his pants.
It's a special day of mine.
And pulls his pants down.
Not only was he a great writer and photographer.
Been drinking it for years.
But he was a huge personality.
Dave starts peeing into a jar.
He was an artist, and he was a rad photographer, and he would use all these crazy chemicals. I think they made him lose his sense of smell.
Red stained photo of a skater.
In the toilet.
Dave drinks from the jar of his urine.
Take a big old swig. Damn, that's good piss.
I was actually in college.
Dave Carney.
In San Luis Obispo.
Writer for Big Brother.
And I met Chris Pontius and his whole crew of merry pranksters. There was this weird group of skaters that were all making these really just fucking stupid videos. And so when we connected with the Big Brother people, it was just kind of a natural fit. We were all doing the same stupid shit already.
A pantsless man gets knocked out. Kendra Gaeta, writer for Big Brother.
So I started with Big Brother because I had a fucked up story about a friend of mine. And he used to sleep over all the time. It was totally normal, no hooking up or anything. And I woke up and one night he was jerking off in the bed next to me. And it was awful. And I was only like 18 at the time and creeped out, and I didn't have the wherewithal to be like, fuck you, get out of my bed. And so instead, I drew a picture.
A cartoon of two stick figures in bed.
And Steve Rocca saw it hanging up in my office. And when he got the story, he was like, I think that's a Big Brother article.
Photo of Kendra at a computer.
Kendra was like a little sister to us, and she also brought a female voice to the magazine.
I never felt like I was just a girl. I didn't even really feel like I was a girl. I probably was just too one of the guys, is what I always felt like.
She actually pulled one of our first pranks where she went on a blind date with a pro skater and secretly recorded it.
Keith Huffnagel.
That was fucking hilarious. I mean, I think I was pissed off for a minute, but then I was just like, whatever, it's hilarious.
It made me feel brave and exciting, and I couldn't believe I pulled it off.
Jeff edits a graphic.
Big Brother used to be out of the South Bay. You know, we were in El Segundo for a while.
Footage of a little person skateboarding over a fire hydrant.
And, Wee Man was sort of a local legend in Hermosa Beach, a skateboarder. You know, I thought it was rad, like, wow, there's this whole midget who skates.
Wee Man, local legend.
Awesome. I met Rick Cossack on a photo shoot one time, and Rick was pretty stoked. So he said, hey, you and I should like start shooting some more photos this week. Let's get some stuff. And ever since then, the Big Brother snowball happened.
Eventually, I hired Wee Man. He was our subscriptions manager. We just loved having him around.
Christmas ad with Wee Man as Rudolph.
I think the magazine just kind of attracted like all the misfits and the people that didn't fit in and skateboarding. And it was like, it brought us all together.
Footage of Earl dancing outside a building during the day.
I'd always seen Earl Parker as just like a resident freak or a resident weirdo, but really, he's a good writer, and he chose awesome stuff to write about, and the way he kind of navigated through the world was interesting, and he really brought that to the stories that he wrote.
Footage of Earl working at a computer.
He would always have stories of the night before, that these weird adventures, like he would meet these people and go and take pictures of them and interview them.
He jumps out a car entering an alley.
He would like write.
He sits by colorful lights.
Whatever he was thinking and whatever he was feeling. And often it was like really random but genius connections.
With Jeff Tremaine.
Earl's first big writing assignment was to go up and cover the Back to the City contest in San Francisco. This was probably the biggest contest in skateboarding at the time.
He was sent to write about the contest, but he was wandering around San Francisco and fell in love with this homeless junkie punk rock girl.
Photo of a young woman with a lip ring.
Hung out with her the whole weekend, and that was the story.
Photo of a messy bedroom.
My favorite part was he took her back to his hotel room, and he ordered her room service, and then he licked her track marks. And he's like, just kidding. I don't know, he was a great writer.
And I was pumped on it. I thought this was amazing. It was well written. It was very much Earl's psyche and very much fit in with what we were starting to do, you know? Like, it was just funny.
He was the voice of that magazine for a long time. As much as Tremaine was like the sort of force of nature behind it, Earl was on the front lines.
With Dave Carney.
Earl's approach to skateboarding was pretty indicative of how we were all responding to skateboarding. Is like you can't write about skateboarding. Who gives a fuck?
Big Brother was really never about skateboarding. I mean, it had skateboarding, but we really hid behind skateboarding to just make this ridiculous magazine of just stupid shit we'd want to do.
The Disneyland LED sign reads Slayer with Big Brother.
We thought it'd be funny to take Slayer to Disneyland. I still think it's funny. Like, Slayer doesn't belong at Disneyland.
footage of skaters at Disneyland.
But somehow they agreed to do that.
So we picked a group of skaters, Danny Way, Lance Conklin, invited Wee Man, Chris Pontius.
Photo of Slayer.
Slayer took their sweet time arriving at Disneyland. So like some of the guys were pretty lubricated by the time they arrived.
Inside a tram, Wee Man bears his butt against the glass window. Footage of Slayer and the skaters exiting the tram.
I'll take you to the teacups, pal.
We were looking for the bar in Disneyland, like, because we heard there was a secret bar, but we couldn't find it. There was no booze in this.
Lance Conklin, pro skateboarder.
I heard somebody going, let's just go back to the bar and just go drink. Like, that's a great idea.
And when we got back to the tram, that's when Lance Conklin jumped into the submarine ride.
Lance hops off the balcony railing into the ride's water. The footage becomes a photo.
I mean, it was mayhem. It was just a lot of bad people at Disneyland at the same time. But we got 4 pages out of it.
And at some point we realized, like, fuck, what are we doing? We should go out on the road.
A title, Tour 94.
And so the first tour we did was out to the Midwest. And the content just wrote itself along the way.
Photos of skaters in Texas.
We realized, like, we can create whole issues just by going on the road for 2 weeks.
A shirtless skater in Arizona flexes.
The first tour was fun, but the tour that we planted the flag, like this is what Big Brother is, was the Mardi Gras tour.
Mardi Gras 1995, they ride in a van.
That tour came up in a point in my life where I was really up for fucking going for it.
Footage of Jeff drinking beer.
Jeff had just broken up with a longtime girlfriend, and he was ready to die and to take everyone along with him.
Hey, kid.
Jeff hands a beer to a child dancing in a crowd.
And that made for the most magic trip ever.
The little boy drinks beer with Jeff until a woman takes the can away. Ed Templeton, pro skateboarder.
It was always a lawlessness to being on the road with a group of skaters, and we'd always do crazy stuff. But I think the Big Brother Mardi Gras tour sort of took that little aspect and pumped it to 1,000.
Footage of women flashing their breasts.
You know, I think that the Mardi Gras tour was almost like a coming of age for a guy like me.
Getting some beer.
The complete and total chaos.
Rob climbs on top of a squad car and skates down the back.
I don't think I've ever experienced anything like it.
Stills of Rob on the cop car in Big Brother.
When I look back on like, okay, when did we skate? Like, I can barely even think of like where we even skated.
Rob grinds a guardrail and tumbles down a cement incline.
Dyrdek and I really forged our relationship.
Rob punches a clown.
On the Mardi Gras trip. He and I got along really well on that trip. His frenetic energy was great. And I was pretty psycho on that trip. Like, I think I was...
Jeff falls down.
Entertaining him.
Michael Burnett, editor of Thrasher magazine.
The Mardi Gras trip taught me the framework of how you do a tour article. You introduce the characters, you take them on a little adventure, you make fun of them along the way, you have little sidebar boxes, and then if you don't have a picture, you have somebody draw a picture of it. That's the thing that affected me the most, is this is the formula. And I've ripped it off for 15 years.
The only thing we blew on that trip, and we blew it bad, was we just didn't have very good coverage.
Drawings of the tour.
I kind of knew in the back of my mind, at some point, we're gonna put out a video that supplements the magazine.
Footage of Jeff Grosso doing skate tricks from Streets on Fire.
Back then, besides magazines, the only way you saw skateboarding was on video.
Natas Kopas twirls on a fire hydrant.
And every company would put these out to basically showcase their teams and sell them in skate shops.
Footage of Tony Hawk.
Kids really don't understand the importance of a skate video and what it meant to wait for a video to come out and have to go buy it at the shop or see it played at the shop.
It wasn't like today, you could just push a button and pretty much see anything. Like, you had to go and like find it.
Jason Lee.
I'll give you $100 and I'll take out the Benihanas if you slide that 75-foot handrail.
It's like the moments in between skating in a video.
Footage of Mark Gonzalez.
You know, that really make you fall in love with this culture and these people.
Randy, no, don't do it.
Jeremy Klein stomps on Rodney Mullen's board.
So going into the East Coast tour, we knew we were going to make a video out of it.
Socrates Leal.
Well, I was invited to go on that trip.
Videographer.
Basically to shoot all the wild and craziness that they would get into, and then some skateboarding too. I guess they're planning on making a skateboard video out of it, you know?
They ride in a van.
And we're off.
Rick smiles in the back.
On the great East Coast tour. So come along and enjoy.
The problem was, we didn't have any skaters who wanted to go with us.
Bill Pepper snarling.
The only skater who showed up was little Bill Pepper.
They sit in the van.
What's up, Socrates?
Just filming. What's in there?
How you doing, buddy?
All right, dude, I need to shake your hand.
Bill opens a pizza box.
We didn't have many pro skateboarders coming with us, but we did have an awesome set of magazine contributors coming. We had Dave Carney for the first time. We had Chris Pontius coming. Kendra was coming with us. And one of the things I was psyched about is we were actually going to meet Dimitri in Boston. He had been a contributing writer and photographer, but this was really the first time we're going to meet him in person.
I was living in New York at the time, and I was sending pictures to all the skate mags, and Big Brother
Dimitri Ilyushkovich
was going on tour on the East Coast, so I met up with him in Boston, and that was the end of my college life.
Come on, we're gonna have a snowball fight.
He had been contributing photos and stories to the magazine for a while, but we really discovered his true talent was behind the video camera. Day one, he caught Carney getting blasted in the face.
A skater's board flies into Dave Carney's face after a failed trick.
I wanted to be part of Big Brother more than any other skate mag because that's the only magazine where you could get away with whatever you want. You know, they were just psyched to get content.
Footage of Kendra stealing an American flag from a gas station. Later, she waves it outside the van window.
Carney was on fire, and it was clear from us from the jump.
Carney went on that tour with just nothing to lose.
It was probably the closest I came to living in the now.
Dave falls off his skateboard.
You know, like going on a skate tour with your friends on the East Coast, fuck yeah, I want to come.
Dave heckles at Wigstock
1995. Mom!
Mom!
Ball of buzzards.
Mom! Get off the stage!
Mom, get off the
stage! Mom, don't do this to yourself!
Get your own damn shadow. I come and fuck with you at your job at McDonald's.
I'm going down! The East Coast trip was kind of like the point where Pontius and I were moved from contributor to staff.
Chris gives Dave's penis a thumbs up.
We even met Bam Margera on that trip in Philadelphia.
They meet a teen boy.
We were shooting at Love Park in Philly, and there's this little 13-year-old kid there with his dad.
Bam's dad climbs a staircase.
He was in Big Brother.
We had no idea he would become such a big part of our future.
On a street at night, Bam and his dad hang out with the Big Brother crew. During the day, Rick rests his arm on the van window, peering in at the camera.
I don't know what to say about our group anymore. What about you, Socrates?
I got it on video.
So we put out our first video, Shit.
An ad for Shit with Wee Man painted blue.
It actually did really well. It got a really good response.
With Jerry Sue.
Basically seeing all the people that made this magazine that I liked come to life.
Shirtless, Jeff flips off a concert crowd.
You know, you get to follow them on a tour. It was amazing.
In a hotel, a man yanks a towel off a woman's waist.
Girls were there for some reason. Like, it was a complete fantasy to me, like, what these guys were doing.
A hotel manager stands in a doorway.
We're just being a little loud. This is not a party place.
Okay.
With Bam.
I think when the first Big Brother video came out, I really liked how it wasn't a skate video with Nartrick. Like, sometimes they went out without a plan. All right, let's paint Wee Man blue, then just roll around LA and fuck around. You know?
Wee Man lights a blue cigarette on the street.
That was like one of the first experiences of us doing like Jackass on the streets. Let's see what kind of reactions we could get.
Wee Man runs through a crowded plaza.
Well, I would never watch them with my mother.
Jeremy Klein, pro skateboarder.
There was what, shit in them? Like, there would actually be people shitting? And male nudity.
Which is the front, which is the back?
The idea of the Depends party was around before the trip even began. Just strap on a bunch of Depends adult diapers, sit around in a hotel room, drink beer, and piss ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
It was Jeff's idea, but it became my dream.
Oh yeah, this is a funky song, I like it. You guys, look, I'm about to pee. I'm peeing.
Footage of the Big Brother staff partying in diapers.
Peeing yourself is every bit as weird as you imagine it would be.
Chris Chris Pontius pees in his diaper.
I just peed!
It's that feeling like when you're in a dream of, wake up, it's time to wake up. This, something really wrong is happening, except for it's real.
I just peed in my pants! You've had it like three times now!
Like, what are you doing?
I'm taking a poo.
Dave Carney squats. Later, he removes the diaper with feces inside.
They're a really good product. Like, they hold your pee, they hold the shit, and they held the stink in.
He's pooed his pants! Look at that!
Because when I took them off to show everybody what I had made, Rick puked. He couldn't handle it. It was that bad.
Rick walks away from the bathroom, shaking his head. He smiles as he sits down.
My parents somehow saw shit, I don't know how, and they were very, very, very disappointed. And that's what they said. That was three berries.
Footage of boys skating.
13-year-old Chris Kearns and his buddies have just taken up skateboarding. Chris decided to go to this Barnes & Noble store in Roseville to pick up a skateboarding magazine.
Thought that there would be, like, tricks and stuff in it.
But what Chris found inside Big Brother magazine was an eye-opening look into the world of adult material. Frontal nudity, pictures of people masturbating, and even a pink panther with an erection are found on the pages of the magazine.
Right around this time, we got into some real trouble with the city of El Segundo.
Big Brother is aimed at Little Brother, and that's what we're against. I don't care if 18 years and above read this garbage, do whatever they want with it, but not at my children, not at any child.
A woman speaking at an El Segundo City Council meeting.
I think it's up to the City Council to do legally what we can do to shut this down.
Absolutely.
Every legal way possible, because it's time. Right now, we're going to say no more to the Roccos and to everybody else out there that has this kind of garbage, man, that are playing against the young people. No more.
I really don't think taking away one little magazine is going to solve your problem.
It's a start. A marathon race just started with the first step. You betcha we do.
The young woman walks away from the podium.
The news got hot on that.
With Jeff.
We were on the news pretty quickly after that.
Sylvia Lopez has the story behind Big Brother magazine.
KCAL 9 News shows up.
Footage of a female reporter at the Big Brother office.
What are you going to do with all this tape?
And we knew they were coming, so we all made hats that said Channel 13 News.
Rick holds up a poster.
Is that going to be it?
This is already out. Why don't you film it? You should film.
This is going to be in the magazine?
It's already out. We've already published this. Number 9.
We just tried to sabotage their interview of us, and then they interviewed me and just caught me out there.
The reporter reads an issue.
And they cropped out the funny. So we thought we had them, but they just had me cropped in tight.
Basically, it's just all in the name of humor. That's what we're doing, and I think it's very obvious.
But Tremaine couldn't defend the publication of sexually explicit material in a magazine whose readers are kids.
There is some very sexually explicit stuff in there.
Yeah, there is.
Pornographic. I mean, I think you'd have to label it that way.
Jeff keeps his gaze lowered.
Well, you can label it, you know. Like I said, I didn't really want to even go on camera, so.
A Barnes & Noble spokeswoman issued this statement saying, due to the sensitive nature of the magazine, we have moved it to the adult area in our bookstores, and we have also polybagged the magazine.
An age restriction sign on a counter.
I guess that freaked everybody out, and like a lot of the advertisers pulled out. That seemed like the magazine could end at any time.
With Jeff.
Big Brother never made money.
A subscription.
We, in fact, lost. We were a losing venture. We didn't sell enough ads to generate enough to really even pay the print bill.
Footage of the Big Brother office.
My CFO, Scott, came to me. He goes, every time you put out an issue of Big Brother, you guys lose like $50,000.
Sean sits in a chair smiling.
We knew Big Brother never made money, but we didn't know it lost that much money. And so it kind of became clear that, you know, we might be on thin ice.
A news article.
People were protesting World Industries. City of El Segundo wanted to kick us out.
Steve rocks in an armchair.
I was thinking, God, should we just like fold it or this and that? And Scott goes, don't. We can sell it. And I'm just like, who in the fuck would buy, like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And he goes, trust me. And then I was in Hawaii at the time, and he called me up and goes, Larry Flint wants to buy it.
I showed up for work one day and Rocco pulled me in and told me that Larry Flint's buying the magazine.
A spread on Larry Flint.
I don't remember exactly how I felt about it. I think I was a little nervous because we had our own little kingdom. There was no one to answer to, absolutely no one. We were doing our own thing.
Get that out of here.
Earl smokes a bong.
But it's Larry Flint, right? So it's gonna be cool, it's gonna be awesome.
Larry Flint with copies of Hustler.
Larry Flint was a pornographer. He was the publisher of Hustler magazine and he was a champion of First Amendment rights. But I was most excited about working for him because it was an actual publishing company and the magazine would have actual distribution and be on real newsstands.
With Rick Cossack.
I wasn't excited about it.
Larry Flint had a lot of rules that we had to follow, and one of them was a strict dress code.
With Dave.
LFP was a corporate environment. And so, yeah, they wanted us to wear like collar shirts and khaki pants and business casual or some shit. And so we were like, we're a skateboard magazine. We can't dress like we're fucking Best Buy employees.
They turned a blind eye to us, but the rest of the building, you know, had to dress up like these half-assed corporate employees.
Sheets of white paper formed the word fuck in the office window.
And I just remember being really struck by
Alan McDonald.
The fact that this magazine was a totally different product each time. And these, I realized these are guys who don't want to get bored. Like literally they reinvented it every month. It was like, you just knew that there was a lot of creativity and talent and energy there and that they were going to go places.
With Tony Hawk.
I remember when Flint Publications bought Big Brother and I just thought that—
Photos of Rick with Hustler models.
Well, it's a relatively good fit because they are shocking, but then I thought, well, does that mean it's going to go to porn? And the irony was that once Flint took it over, it got mellower.
An article, Beaver Hunt.
I mean, it wasn't like conservative, but like Larry Flint wasn't like, you know, he wasn't out to like, he didn't buy Big Brother for like the tits.
Larry Flint.
We were publishing a number of porn magazines. It didn't make any sense to do any more of them. So we were going after the mainstream media, trying to find niche areas that we could be successful in, whether it be skateboarding or whatever.
An article about the merger.
So immediately after we started at Flint, there was no more boobs, no more dicks. Like any genitalia had to be covered.
We were always trying to—
He holds up a stack of magazines.
Get away with shit. And so we thought it'd be really funny. What if we hit a really naughty picture and a bad word right on the cover, but we got caught like
letters
right
on the spines read
here.
Fucky poo poo.
These are called cover blurbs. And if you look here, P-U-S-S. Why?
He points to the first letters in a row of cover lines.
You know, sometimes we would get away with it, and sometimes we wouldn't.
Tonight, a local El Cajon couple is outraged by a national magazine aimed at kids who like skateboarding.
Yeah, the kids issue, we got in trouble for.
With big block lettering, bright colors, bold print, and the words kids issue in one corner, Cheryl Templeton thought she knew what she was buying.
Dave holds it.
Parents looked at the cover and they saw a kids issue. But you'll notice there's no apostrophe there. This isn't an issue for kids. This is an issue about kids.
A man with two children.
But I was just livid.
Colton's dad found references to bestiality, nudity, suicide, and more, all mixed in with kids' interviews.
One of the questions that I think every kid got asked was, would you F your mom to be as good as the Muska? Because Muska was the best skater at the time.
You know, thank God my questions weren't as bad as some of these other kids that I saw. And
Ryan Checkler, pro skateboarder.
I remember watching the news a little bit later, and then I saw the cover on the news, and I was like, Mom, that's me. And then they were talking about all the controversy, and then she had to kick me out of the room.
A news interview.
I'm outraged at this.
Read on, and it gets worse. This section titled, How to Make a Kid, describes sexual intercourse in the form of a baking recipe. It's so bad, we can't even show it to you.
Who publishes this?
Actually, that's the only part about all of this that isn't shocking, because the publisher of Big Brother Skateboarding is self-proclaimed pornographer Larry Flint.
Some of the things in here just seem like they're trying to break down children's inhibitions by asking children, for example, do you know what a scrotum is? Do you have pubic hair yet? Would you have sex with your mother?
Larry grins at the journalist.
Well, that's kind of kinky. You
know? Heather Lee Jones, advertising director for Big Brother.
We've gotten the news for that, but it never caused any problems. The one issue that I thought, I was like, this is the demise of us. Larry Flint's going down, we're going down, everybody's going down. Because the Big Brother subscribers got sent an issue of Taboo magazine. The list got switched.
So Flint had this porn magazine called Taboo. It was their naughtiest magazine. It was the one that had girls peeing on people. Like, just their most radical title was Taboo.
And not only is it Taboo magazine, but it's the fisting issue of Taboo magazine. On the cover, there is a black fist covered in KY in front of a girl. And I'm thinking, this magazine is going unsolicited into people's homes to probably a lot of underage kids.
A topless woman grips the rubber fist.
And that's gotta be illegal.
Here's an odd story. There's this magazine for skateboarders called Big Brother Skateboard Magazine. Larry Flint puts it out.
Jay Leno on The Tonight Show.
Well, somehow, all the subscribers, and Larry Flint said last night in the news, they got the mailings mixed up. Somehow, the subscribers to Skateboard Magazine actually got copies of the adult magazine Taboo instead.
Jay shrugs.
You know who I feel sorry for? The guys who subscribed to Taboo. They wound up getting the skateboard magazine. You know, those are the ones that I feel.
A mail carrier walks on stage.
Kev, what is this?
The carrier hands Kevin Eubanks a copy of Big Brother.
And that was it. And then that was done. And anytime you get on the television, advertisers who were maybe on the fence are like, well, more people are picking up this magazine now, so I'm going to advertise in it.
Stupid skateboard.
I don't know.
Kevin smiles.
So it wasn't a bad thing for us.
An article about the mix-up.
Anytime anything like that happened, you know, boom, we would just sell magazines. It was great.
An ad with Sean.
Aside from losing the gratuitous nudity, the most troubling thing was that Flint wanted us to go monthly.
That scared the shit out of me. Like, look, we were barely keeping our head above water and keeping enough content for a bi-monthly magazine. But we got a bunch of new contributors.
Chris Neratko.
I came across a copy of Big Brother, and I fell in love with it instantly.
Writer for Big Brother.
Chris Neratko started writing for us. He would mainly do music interviews, and he would ask the artists the craziest questions. Like, he asked Big Pun, what's the most expensive pair of sneakers you own? And followed it up with, don't you think that's kind of a waste of money since you'll never be able to see them?
Photo of the interview with Big Pun.
No wonder Big Pun pulled a gun on him. I almost didn't believe him until I went with him to interview Ronnie James Dio, the legendary singer of Black Sabbath.
Yo, we're here to see Dio.
Rick and Neratko outside the House of Blues.
We go into the interview, and there's like these metalheads in the waiting area. And they're like, hey, don't ask him about Ozzy. Don't ask him about this. They're giving me these pointers.
Don't piss him off.
In a dim room.
He might kick your ass.
I took notes on everything they told me not to ask about, and that's everything that I asked about.
How you doing?
Hey, big
What's
bro.
Up? How you
All
doing?
Right, man. How you guys doing?
Good, good.
Dio hugs Neratko and greets the others.
He's a short little fucker, and when I got in there, it was the first thing I said.
How tall are you? Pretty short, huh?
No, I'm actually 7'9".
You look so short.
I can't believe that you didn't realize that.
You always seem so much bigger.
I'm not short, so don't piss me off or you won't get a good interview.
No, I'm not saying that it's
a
bad thing.
Well, you said I was short. That pisses me off right away.
Out of the gates, he just starts pushing his buttons hard, and Dio is getting pissed.
How old are you anyway, Rodney?
Ronnie?
Yeah.
Well, you're really fucking stepping your foot in this one, aren't you, mate?
I think I asked him how they made him look so tall on the album covers when he's such a short little fucker.
Look, if you want me to beat the fuck out of you, I'll be more than happy to.
No, I don't want you to.
Let's just clear the fucking room and I'll kick your fucking ass for you. If that's what you want, no problem for me.
No, I don't.
I'm good at that.
I don't want that. I'm just asking.
Fine, let's go. Come on out. Man. Thank you very much.
And all hell broke loose. He called for security.
I don't appreciate this fucking shit either. Just get out right now. Out.
It turned into complete chaos. And after that, I never doubted Neratko again.
Hey, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to upset you.
You should be fucking sorry, mate.
Dio storms past Neratko in the hall. Steve-O, amateur stuntman.
I was living in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and when Big Brother came through town with a skate tour for a shoe company called Duff's, I just tracked those guys down.
With Dimitri.
Yeah, he found us. We were on tour with Duff's, and when he caught wind of that, like, he just went off.
I wanted to be a skateboarder and in skateboard media, but I just wasn't that good at skateboarding. So I just said, okay, screw the skateboarding. I'm gonna provide the comic relief.
Outside at a party.
And Steve-O had the idea to light his hair on fire and have Markovitch blow a fireball off his head.
What is that?
Hairspray.
Steve-O applies hairspray to his head.
Which all sounds nifty and cool, but what made it a hit was that the fireball didn't get blown off of my head. It got blown point blank directly into my face.
A woman ignites his hair and a man spits rubbing alcohol on him. With his head in flames, Steve-O does a backflip.
Markovitch ended up like blowing all the alcohol in Steve-O's face. So when he lit it, like his whole head lit up. He still did the backflip and
slow motion footage of his backflip.
That was in the article.
An article, the Burning Boy Festival.
That's when Steve-O first was in the pages of Big Brother. His dream, but he burnt his face off to do it.
That's how we got introduced to Steve-O.
A still of Steve-O's burnt face and body.
The first time I met Steve-O in person, we did our Florida tour. Steve-O was red hot. Like, he wanted to be in front of the cameras so bad. But he was also super annoying the whole time.
I kind of had the same effect on everybody. I was like super annoying. I should say they were annoyed.
Steve-O's front tooth is missing.
I wasn't annoying. They were annoyed.
Steve-O climbs on the ledge of a bridge.
But goddamn, did he deliver. Like, he did this front flip and a half off this bridge and just ate shit.
Fully clothed, Steve-O does a front flip and a half into a river. Steve-O surfaces and starts swimming.
I think we tried to ditch him then. He was in the water, and I'm pretty sure we were going to load up the car and ditch him there.
He climbs a ladder up to the bridge.
Motherfucker, he just somehow scurried back in, saw us, and just got on the case and could not ditch him.
He runs along the bridge.
I did everything I could to force my way into the scene. I practiced my autograph for years before anybody ever wanted it. Like, I was just wanted to be famous so fucking bad. And the first time I got recognized for being in a Big Brother video.
Action stills of Steve-O jumping off the bridge.
It's, you know, like, hi.
A still of Johnny Knoxville smiling.
Well, I'm Johnny Knoxville, United States of America, and I'll be doing a little article on self-defense equipment.
I had met Knoxville through Spike. And he was a writer at the time. He was writing for another magazine.
I didn't write for Big Brother for a long time because I didn't skate, and I don't know what I'm going to write about if I don't skate. But it wasn't just skating, it was a lot of bad behavior, which I could do.
He came to us with the idea to do a product review on various self-defense items.
In a backyard.
I'm going to start off by spraying myself with Sabre Red pepper spray. It's the highest concentration you can get.
Stills from the article.
He's going to pepper spray himself, stun gun himself, shoot taser darts into himself, and then eventually putting on a bulletproof vest and shooting himself.
Well, you know, I'd moved out to Los Angeles to become an actor 5 or 6 or 7 years prior, and I had really not done anything about it. And then my girlfriend at the time got pregnant, and that was a huge wake-up call in my life that I have to do something quick.
Then we're going to drive out to the desert.
Johnny holds a revolver.
I have a .38 hammerless, nice and light Smith & Wesson. It's got all the stocking power of a 9mm, and I'll be getting shot in the chest.
He holds up a Kevlar vest.
With this 9/11 level 2A Kevlar vest.
He doesn't have a pot to piss in at this time, so the bulletproof vest he got was the cheapest one on the market.
I wish I had enough money for the most expensive vest, but I didn't. Those were like 700 or a grand, and there is no way I had that kind of scratch.
I thought that was a great idea for an article, and thought, man, we should film this. This is gonna be great, but we should film it too.
A man holds the pepper spray.
Just tell me when to go.
Okay.
We filmed the first three things at beautiful Jason's house, and it seemed to go, I mean, we couldn't see from the footage, but it felt like we were getting something.
Johnny staggers back as the man sprays his face.
Ah.
Johnny doubles over and kneels down.
Ah.
His eyes are clenched shut.
Oh my God.
And when he came back with these tapes, it was so compelling.
Because
Knoxville could talk to the camera. He was the first guy that we had that could actually talk on camera.
How you feeling, BJ?
Oh, I feel like my eyes have gonorrhea.
Johnny lowers a towel from his face.
And he walked you through all these tests. First, it's the pepper spray. You saw how bad that sucked. Then it was the stun gun.
Charge!
Third was the taser darts.
Weren't you on 90210 not too long ago? Oh, fucking hell!
And he's making it funny.
No, quit!
Johnny squirms in the grass as he gets tased.
And then we had to decide where I was going to get shot because we had no location, and we just got on the freeway and started driving. And during the whole car ride out there, the anxiety in the car was just getting higher and higher.
Footage from the car.
And then when we got to the fire road and I pulled out the gun, everyone started freaking out. My friend Beautiful Jason, who was supposed to shoot me, said, "I'm not shooting you." He goes, "You got a kid, I'm friends with your wife. I can't shoot you."
On a mountain road.
Like that, Jason?
Johnny points the gun at his chest.
How's that?
Huh?
How's that?
He aims at a black circle drawn on his t-shirt over his stomach.
Looks pretty good.
And then my friend Jeff Bender, who's taking the still shots, told me at that moment that he'd watched a friend of his die from doing a stunt.
Johnny glances around.
Not great news. So he was no longer taking still shots. And then Loomis, my friend Loomis, stepped up and said, I'll film you. But he'd never worked a camera before or since, probably. And he was just all over the place.
The camera shakes around.
This is like a bad fucking scene right now. I don't want anything to do with this crap.
I wish somebody had shoot me. I'm not.
Johnny pats the vest beneath his shirt.
Say a prayer, dude.
DJ, we don't even know where there's a hospital. You going?
Let's go.
In wide stance, he holds the gun to his chest.
Let's fucking go, DJ. This is beyond dumb. DJ, let's fucking go.
He pulls the trigger.
Let's go.
Now you gotta go the whole way around.
Sure?
I can't handle this.
DJ, let's fucking go.
Find out where the bullet went.
DJ. Come on, man.
He continues cycling through the empty chambers.
DJ, let's fucking go. I'm about to throw a fucking rock at you. Let's go.
Johnny hesitates, then tries to fire again.
It's the next one.
PJ, come on.
I can't handle this.
PJ, this is so fucking lame. I can't even tell you right now. Forget it.
As Johnny shoots a hole through his shirt, the gun goes flying. He rips off his shirt and picks up the gun.
When the bullet finally went off, it just threw me back.
Let's go, dude. Just go. Put it in that thing and go. Just leave it in.
It's like someone hit you in the chest with a shovel.
Johnny removes his vest.
Just leave it on.
And this crazy rush of adrenaline shot through me, and I just remembered, let's get the fuck out of here.
He gets in the car.
Jeff, will you drive?
And just so relieved that I just didn't die, you know, because.
DJ, how'd it feel?
It was cool.
Didn't hurt?
No, I was kind of scared, though.
Johnny peers over his shoulder as the car drives off.
Yeah, I feel like Johnny Ace playing Russian roulette. It was cool, like it took five times to do.
Yeah, that was my response.
So you didn't even leave a fucking dude, I told you guys.
I know when I went in the office that Monday, everyone had seen the footage and they were really excited. So I was thrilled because I looked up to the Big Brother guys in that they liked the footage. I remember being really proud of that.
Burritos on me.
Footage of Johnny laughing silently and clapping in the back seat. He peers out the rear window.
Once Knoxville started getting involved with the magazine and riding more, he was becoming a significant personality.
Johnny riding a bull.
He's never even ridden a skateboard. Like, he has nothing to do with skateboarding, but
with Dave.
Here he is in the skateboard magazine. He fit in perfect.
I felt like I finally found a home, and this could be something. And I think
Big Brother writers dressed as sumo wrestlers.
And I know Jeff felt that way too. He recognized it. It was a special group.
A photo of Johnny getting maced.
If there was any article that I remember vividly, it was the self-defense article that Johnny Knoxville did because he shot himself.
With Tony Hawk.
And then we knew you guys had it on video and just figured, well, it'd be in the next Big Brother video, which was, you know, scattered skate stuff and other hijinks. And then all of a sudden it was like, no, this is a whole new thing.
A title number two.
I'm sure there's a fucking shit ton of people who get down on me for this right now, but like, I don't remember the skating. I remember going, you have to see the video because this fucking weird dude from Tennessee shoots himself.
Slow motion footage of Johnny shooting himself and staggering back. With Spike Jones.
I don't even know if the standout, but for some reason etched in my mind permanently is the Pucano.
In the past 1,000 years, volcanoes have claimed more than 300,000 lives.
Which is just such a shocking image.
No beauty more deadly than the fire within.
On the beach, projectile diarrhea sprays from Chris Pontius's buttocks in slow motion.
Pontius stole Carney's thunder on the Pucano. Like, the Pucano is Carney's idea.
Carney went to do his, and it didn't fly the way he imagined. So I ended up doing the Pucano, and I don't want to say I got credit for it, but like I never wanted this kind of credit.
He just had a better shit at the time. And he also, Chris has a bubblier butt, so it looked better for the fake volcano that it was Chris's butt, you know?
Jeff stares off for a moment.
I've made a career off of Chris's butt.
Chris rollerblades around a plaza in a jockstrap.
The second Big Brother video, he filmed me rollerblading in like a jockstrap, and people were yelling at me like, put some pants on, and like, want, like these volleyball players like threw a ball at me wanting to fight, you know, like, it sounds ridiculous now too. Because now like, if I did the same thing, people would just be cheering, you know? And the world was not as good of a place then.
There was nothing like Big Brother videos out there. As simple as it seems now, looking back on this stuff, I think it was definitely like very pioneering for its time.
A young man lights a firework out of his butt.
Nowadays, you could search on YouTube and find crazy stuff, but Big Brother had that all in their videos, you know what I mean? So it was like, it was just crazy. I mean, it was just good times. I mean, you always look forward to a Big Brother video because you never knew what the hell was going to be in it.
The next video was Boob.
Larry Flint.
Boob.
I was like, okay, I got another video. I have to think of some things to do.
Hi, I'm Johnny Knoxville, and I'm gonna get hit by a car real soon.
Johnny gets hit by a white station wagon and rolls across the roof.
I was like just such a fan right away, and also, of course, like threatened because I'm like, fuck, this guy might be gnarlier than me, you know? Like,
Steve-O does a backflip off a high ledge into water.
Well, Steve-O, he actually got me into...
Bam sits in a chair.
Jumping off random bridges into water, you know, like when I saw him do a front flip blowing a fireball out, you know, like I'm like, so I started getting into that too.
Bam jumps off a bridge into a river.
So Bam came out with a video called CKY, which was really similar in spirit to what we were doing.
Bam punches his friend.
It was just him and his friends fucking around in Pennsylvania.
Bam falls face first onto a mattress.
To Bam's credit, like when I started, it was all like stunts.
Johnny skates down a half pipe and crashes to the floor.
And then I saw a CKY video and they were like doing pranks.
Bam drops a meal at a fast food restaurant.
I'm like, oh, I should start doing pranks.
Excuse me, ma'am?
At a diner with poop on his plate.
Ma'am? I'm sorry. This sausage doesn't look right. It looks a little like poop.
She stares at it.
The sausage looks like poop. It smells.
This is not the sausage.
Oh.
That opened up a whole new thing for me.
I can't eat it. I can't eat it.
I thought I could make a TV show out of it. I don't even know what the TV show would be. But we had an exceptional...
The Big Brother team posing outside.
...arsenal of shitbags. So I called Knoxville. Hey, let's partner up and try to make a TV show out of this.
And I said, okay. And Spike got us his agent, his attorney.
Johnny sits at a desk.
Incredibility.
Steve-O gargles bong water.
And after that, I just cut together basically the best of our videos mixed with Bam's stuff for CKY.
Bam falls from a cart.
And MTV just loved it. You know, they ordered a series.
Van Toffler.
You know, MTV had been into scripted shows for quite some time at that point, and Jackass sort of felt like a polar opposite. The feeling was this spoke so authentically to the audience that we had to let it go. No intelligent, thoughtful adult would make a show like this.
Johnny on the cover of Calendar.
And so it's perfect. It's perfect for the teenagers who watch MTV.
It reads Luck, Muck, and No Shame.
You know, I remember the day that Jeff told me at lunch that he was leaving the magazine, and I just remember being devastated. I was like, oh my God, you're leaving the magazine? And he was like, yeah, I'm gonna go on to make Jackass, you know? MTV picked it up, and I'm gonna go do this full time.
At the Flint Publications building.
So I kind of felt like.
White paper spells Jackass in the windows.
This is the end of an era and the beginning of a new one.
It was a scary decision. Jackass was not the sure thing that it seems like it would, you know, it was going into the unknown. But it really was, you know, leaving Big Brother was, you know, it was leaving a family behind, you know?
A still of Jeff, Larry, and the writers pointing at their heads.
Once Jackass happened and part of the staff left, Dave Carney became editor of the magazine, and that's when we brought on Chris Noracco as managing editor.
To me,
with Dave.
Jackass was great, cool, but I get to have a skateboard magazine? This is actually mine now? I can do whatever the fuck I want in this? Way cooler.
A Big Brother cover reads Daniel Haney, Playmates, Slipknot, farting.
When they all left, it was like someone had come in and sterilized the office with a hose connected to the fountain of youth.
Noracco dives out of a moving boat for an article, Spring Break, Lake Havasu.
And so it was me.
Footage of men throwing shoes at each other.
Dimitri, who was maybe 21.
With Dimitri.
Big Brother let me do what I love, which is shoot skating and travel the world and write about it. I was going to all these places I never dreamt I'd go to, you know, all for skateboarding.
Spreads from Big Brother in various countries.
And then we had a bunch of young interns.
Footage of two men wrestling in a ring.
And then Carney was like the leftover old guy, and Kosick, who was like, I think he was the oldest of anyone ever.
Dave baptizes a man in a pool.
It was going good.
With Rick.
You know, the magazine was the biggest it's ever been. We had some great moments. We put out another really good video.
A skateboarder lands a trick and gets tackled by a man.
Which was Crap.
In Larry's office.
Crap, 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 crap.
On the cover of Crap, Rick wears a diaper and a giant wooden cross on his back. A spread reads, Heather Does Philly.
I think that's the main thing that I got out of working there is it was like a big family, a big dysfunctional family. It was fun and everybody would hang out together and drink together and do stupid stuff, and even when you were working in the offices, it never really felt like work.
Diaper-clad writers hop with their feet tied together.
The skateboarding industry, it's notoriously up and down.
An article, Mika Winkler.
I think right when Jackass was starting to, the skateboarding industry was up.
Skateboarders at the X Games.
Skateboarding is getting bigger. It's on national television.
A Bagel Bites commercial.
But those are the big money guys, and they don't like Big Brother.
A skateboarding-themed commercial for Dairy Queen.
And Flint's like, where's all the money? And it wasn't coming to us.
A Doritos commercial starring Tony Hawk.
Right around 2004, skateboarding was seeing this influx of money from outside corporations.
Tony goes about his morning on a skateboard.
The core brands started taking themselves too serious, and they just didn't want their athletes.
A topless woman with her head in a skater's lap.
Portrayed in a negative light.
With Jamie Thomas.
The risks never stopped. The magazine seemed like it took risks up until there wasn't enough interaction or advertisers that wanted to participate in the risk.
A review of Nike's with poop on
them. The editorial staff maybe did change what they're writing in order to please an advertiser. And I think that was one of the things that was different about us.
You know, there was sort of a punk rock ethos in the magazine where, like, we're not changing, we do what we want.
And in the end, it hurt the magazine.
Because you piss off a lot of people and they just wouldn't advertise.
Poop falls on Nike sneakers.
But you gain all this notoriety with your readership because you go, holy shit, no one else has the balls to do that. Thank you for losing a major advertiser to amuse me.
It sucks. It sucks because...
With Chris Noracco.
At the end of the day, Larry Flynn is a publisher. And if we're not making money, there's no reason to keep us around.
With Dave Carney.
And it was just this fucking sinking ship, which it didn't feel like a sinking ship. Like, I was completely shocked and surprised when I got called up and fired.
Footage of the Flint publication tower.
Just one day, the VP of Flint called Dave and I up to her offices and said they were pulling the plug, that it wasn't making enough money.
A photo of Dave and Rick sitting on skateboards.
And that was really what it was all about. So when all these motherfuckers in the industry come up to me and are like, hey, you guys should bring Big Brother back. I'm like, fuck you. Shouldn't have pulled your advertising. I didn't kill it, you killed it.
X Games footage of Chad Muska.
Maybe it was the change of an era, you know what I mean? I think that was a transition stage of skateboarding in general.
Footage of Chad grinding a rail.
And with that transformation into a mainstream, I think people were a little bit more scared to associate themselves with things that were a little bit riskier.
With Atiba Jefferson.
I think there were points skaters are like, dude, I don't want to hear you ask questions about my dick. I don't want to hear you ask questions about my mom, you know, and turds, you know? Like, they didn't want to hear that. Dicks and shit definitely probably, you know, hung them.
Steve-O sits in a red chair beside a blown-up Big Brother cover.
I personally mourned the loss of Big Brother maybe more than anybody. I love that shit. And I always love that shit.
With Sean Cliver.
It's one of those things I get nostalgic for because it was one of the funnest times of my life in that it was all I lived for.
The crew in formal clothes.
It was all any of us lived for, I think. We had nothing else in our lives. It was just Big Brother. And everything that happened in our lives happened in Big Brother.
An article, Last Call.
We were these characters. And in a real office setting, you're just an employee. You go to work, you do your job, and then you punch out. But for us, work was an adventure.
Dave dressed as a human skateboard.
When I get recognized for Jackass, I don't care.
Rick in a Jackass t-shirt.
It really matters most when people go, man, I love Big Brother magazine. That's when I'm feeling like, yeah, that's cool, you know? Those are the real fans.
With Jonah Hill.
I know for myself, like, that was my biggest influence, at least comedically. Humor didn't feel dangerous until I picked up a Big Brother.
An article, How to Catch AIDS.
And then I felt that humor could be cool because it could be dangerous and make people uncomfortable.
A still of the Pucano.
Clearly commercials and TV shows.
Van Toffler.
They all sort of went for that low-tech, low-vibe-y look right after Jackass came out because it sort of swept up culture. Everyone talked about it. It was on the news shows. They were guests on the nightly shows.
With Steve Rocco.
You know, I remember when the first Jackass came, everybody's going, oh, did you see that? Did you see this? And I was like, they're all blown away by it. I'm going, it's just a magazine. It's just a fucking magazine on video.
Action stills of Johnny falling downstairs.
Big Brother's influence told everyone else that.
With Gavin McInnes.
You should get fired. You should make mistakes. You should get in trouble. You should lose advertisers. You shouldn't play the game.
An article, Big Trouble in Ohio.
It's a more important lesson than it's ever been.
A photo of Big Brother on the news with Jeff Tremaine.
To this day, I still work with Cliver every day. Rick Cossack every day. Rob Dyrdek.
A photo of Rob and Jeff.
Johnny Knoxville.
Johnny and Old Man Makeup.
I mean, we're all still together in many ways.
A photo of Jeff, Sean, Earl, Mark, and Rick at a party. A photo of Johnny, Heather, and Jeff.
Big Brother was like a really important thing in my life. I felt that it was important at the time. I just didn't know how important it was or it was going to be to me.
With Dave Carney.
I mean, those guys were all, they're all my fucking friends, you know? Like, they see me, like, they fucking shit my pants, and
Dave shakes his head.
And then, hold on a second.
Dave walks away. Larry Flint in his office.
Now go fuck yourself.
Footage plays over credits. Producer, Sean Cliver. Executive producer, Jeff Tremaine. Editor, Seth Casriel. Co-producer, Lizbeth Gonzalez. Associate producers, Rick Cossack, Dave Carney, Lauren Graham. Supervising producer, Shanna Zablow Newton. Credits continue. On a half pipe, Johnny tases Dave from behind. Footage of a skateboarder jumping the LA River. Rick spins in a bumper boat at a theme park. Footage of Wee Man painted blue screaming. Narutko dances on a coffee table. It collapses beneath him. A skateboarder jumps down a large outdoor staircase. Copyright 2017, Hulu LLC, all rights reserved. Hulu LLC is the author of this motion picture for the purposes of the Berne Convention and all national laws giving effect thereto. and for the purposes of copyright law in the United Kingdom. This motion picture is protected under the laws of the United States and other countries. Unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition may result in civil liability and criminal prosecution. Distributed by Hulu LLC. Audio description by Point 360. Voiced by Tansy Alexander. Footage of a little girl standing in a sunny backyard. Rainbow stripes intersect with a film reel forming the Gorilla Flicks logo. Letters come together outside in the moonlight. Hulu Originals.